I'm kind of convinced you have to be a little crazy to run for Congress, or you have to be corrupt or a narcissist.
What got you into wanting to run for Congress?
My family came from Cuba. My mom, you know, came here with nothing. The warning signs of communism were all sort of ingrained in me very young. And I saw what was happening in California. I saw that this was sort of a new form of communism, one where the state was even more dishonest. This new form of communism doesn't need to be out front. You don't need to be like China and have an outward social credit system. You just need AI that operates within it, that acts as the social credit system. You know, Bard said that I should be put to death.
It made up reasons why you were racist that didn't even exist.
To support the idea of me getting the death penalty or my kids being taken.
It's not easy to speak the truth today.
Threats in our mail. We've had a guy show up banging on the doors. All types of crazy shit. Devil works hard. You need to work harder.
Let's get to work. Robbie Starbuck, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. We're actually doing a little something different because we're in your studio today.
Yep. That's why I said I'm stoked to be here. I didn't have to go anywhere. It was easy. I'm here and you got to come visit me, so I'm excited.
Well, I've been wanting to come see your house for a while, so yep. This place is awesome, man.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I got to show you our giant rooster later.
Oh, yeah.
He's like one of the biggest roosters you've ever seen.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess, you know, we haven't talked in probably a year or so.
Way too long.
It's been a long time. I mean, before, just for a little background, you were running for Congress.
Yep.
You actually launched your congressional campaign. I believe it was at my house.
Yes,
in Nashville.
At your house. Yep.
And so we became friends over that. Talk a little bit about that experience, because people might have forgot all that went on at the time. But you moved from California. You ran for Congress. You were leading in the polls. And then a curveball happened.
Yeah, so, I mean, the story's crazy. Really, I think one of the things that has been the most misunderstood, actually, is when I moved here, because we've been here almost about 6 years. And so, at that time, I had already been here well over the three-year mark that they created. So, somebody in the legislature, this guy, Senator Nicely, he created a law that if you, and this is after I had already been running for a long time, he creates this law that if you haven't lived here 3 years, you can't run for Congress. Mm. And they did this thinking I hadn't lived here 3 years, which I'm not sure where they got that idea from. Mm-hmm. Like, they never came and asked me or anything. Nobody was like, hey, how long has it been? So they tried that, and then when they realized that didn't work, other methods, there was this, you know, protest made by some people who did not want me to go to Congress, where they said, we want the SEC to vote that Robbie is not eligible for Congress, that he cannot run as a Republican. They did this after the deadline to file as an independent, because they knew if I ran as an independent, that would be a whole host of other issues for them, where either I would win or it would result in a Democrat winning, which is ultimately why I would not have run as an independent anyways, because I wouldn't take the chance of a Democrat taking the seat. However, that was like their thought process. So they wait until the very last minute to launch this thing. We fight back and go and sue after the SEC in a secret meeting does this vote where they say, you're not eligible to run as a Republican. This is despite the fact I've been a registered Republican in a closed primary state my entire adult life and have voted Republican my entire life and have only donated to and been an activist for Republican causes my whole life. So the whole idea is ludicrous because they did this under this idea that you have to be a bona fide Republican is what they call it.
Bona fide. I remember that word now. Yeah, bona fide. Yes.
I do think one of the really wonderful things that came out of this, though, is that I am not like a special person this happened to. This is something that I didn't know had been going on in our country for a long time. I actually just found out about another way they're doing this in Wisconsin yesterday. So if you're running for Senate in Wisconsin, you cannot, the party is sending out a letter to these candidates saying you cannot be on the ballot unless you raise $1 million.
What?
So you have to raise $1 million by this arbitrary date or they will not allow you to be on the ballot as a Republican candidate for Senate. Now, here's the thing about it is that, you know, the candidates in there who are not going to raise $1 million probably are not going to win. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because running a Senate race is very expensive and it's not easy. However, all of this reminds me, you know, what bothered me the most is my family coming from Cuba, knowing that they have a commission, a central commission that decides who can and cannot be on the ballot. And that's essentially what we have here now. And, you know, when you realize this is going on all over the country, not just here, my case just got the most press out of the cases of this happening, because people were very surprised. I had run a really good campaign. We were in the lead. We had great endorsements everywhere, you know, and really, when powerful national figures like a United States senator like Rand Paul weighs in on a race like that in Congress, and the person's winning, I don't know of any time that anybody's been removed. And I think that's why it was kind of shocking to people. And it happened very late in the game. And it happened despite the fact that we won in state court, which was incredible. You showed up.
Oh, yeah. I was there.
And we had a full courtroom of people who wanted their voice heard in the election. And so the state courts ruled in our favor. Then the folks behind the decision, then, you know, they appealed to the state Supreme Court. State Supreme Court ruled essentially that a party can remove somebody for any reason they want. They don't have to have a reason, really. They just can arbitrarily decide they don't want someone to be the, quote, standard bearer of the party. That's a new right that I've never heard of. I don't believe is granted anywhere in our Constitution. I think it's a very bizarre, arbitrary thing where, you know, the reality is we don't live in a country where people win elections running as like the Whig Party. Mm-hmm. You know, we're pretty much a binary country, you know, where you run as Democrat or Republican. Independents rarely win anything. Yeah. And people don't really want to run as independents because even if you have a chance to win, you also risk splitting the vote. And you're forcing people then who are not truly independents to run as independents, because they're not able to work within the confines of this system that says you have to basically walk this line or we're not going to allow you to be on the ballot. So I had, you know, the very sort of legalistic issues with how they did this, but also just emotional from, like, you know, seeing how it mirrors broken systems across the world. I guess the last thing I'll say about it is that the thing that hurt the most about it is people gave so much energy to the campaign and money and time, and it mattered to all of us. And, you know, the vicious things said about my wife and kids, like, you wouldn't even believe some of the stuff that was said about my wife and kids. I don't really care what people say about me. I mean, people have said all kinds of wild stuff about me.
Was it the party?
It was being spread. No. It was being spread by candidates who were afraid that I would stay on the ballot. Oh, so gosh. They were spreading stuff that was just awful. I mean, they spread rumor that my oldest child was trans.
What?
Too, which is just bizarre given the fact that I've been very vocally against the transitioning of children. So it's just that in itself was just weird, because I was like, any sensible person's going to look at like the history. But imagine a candidate's like team ever saying something like that about a child. You know, thank God my child, she's amazing and beautiful and a just incredible kids, so like she didn't care, it didn't faze her. But you say that about the wrong person's child, like that could be like a really scary, dangerous territory stuff, you know. Not all kids are like super emotionally stable like my daughter is. So, you know, it was just a really bad experience, to be honest. But I did learn a lot about, you know, the way things worked and what needed to change and what the future of shaping change would look like.
So, you know, since then you've got some bills passed, you've actually done a lot. You're talking about, you know, probably accomplishing more by being out of Congress than you might have if you would have been in Congress. But what have you learned since then? Because you've gotten to be friends with, you know, more people probably in the party. And has anybody kind of just kind of told you like, hey, sorry about this, but, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely people who they know they were lied to, you know, where they got like these dossiers, not just on me, but on Morgan Ortegas as well. They basically framed us as like, you know, like we were secret Democrats trying to come in and steal the election so we could help Nancy Pelosi, which is insane. I mean,
you're not a Democrat?
And, yeah, unbelievable, right? and so, you know, the whole thing was absurd. And I think a lot of people realized that there were some very dishonest actors during that election who they didn't tell the truth about, you know, really what was going on. And I think people get that now. There's a lot of people within the party who get that. I think that, you know, if people could go back, I do think it would be a different result now. I think that if people have gotten to know and trust me and know kind of where our heart is at, know what me and my wife believe in. And I think they understand that we have a burning desire to do good work, you know, and that's kind of like, that's what drives us every day is do good, even if it's a little bit, get something good done each day. And so, you know, my wife, actually, a lot of people confuse this. You know, our friend Matt Walsh helped like really blow the story up, but my wife actually broke the Vanderbilt story about Vanderbilt doing gender transitions on kids. And Matt really blew it up. And then we did the rally with Matt, my wife, myself, Matt, and we got Tennessee to ban the, you know, sexual transition of minors. You know, what adults want to do is adults' business, but for kids, you know, we knew that this was something that was incredibly damaging in so many ways. And you know, to be perfectly honest, that and a host of other bills, like right now there's one that we're supporting here in Tennessee that will result in the death penalty for any child rapists of kids under the age of 13. And we've got another one that was introduced yesterday in Kentucky where we're helping Rep Candy over there get it passed that'll do the same thing. And we've got these types of bills all throughout the country. I do not think that we would have gotten anywhere near the amount done that we've gotten done had I won that race. So, you know, as upsetting as it was to have it turn out the way it did, because it felt like a waste of valuable time and money from a lot of really good people. And it especially hurt the way that it affected, you know, my wife and kids. They went through so much and I wasn't home so much for something that was just kind of ripped away, and that sucked. But you find these blessings in weird places, and I feel like a door was opened up in another way to do all these incredible things and help people and to do the right thing and do good and make Tennessee an even better place to live, you know?
Yeah. What got you, you know, into, you know, wanting to run for Congress, then wanting to make a difference, you know, for kids in positive ways? Was there like a activism moment that sparked everything?
Well, in terms of running for Congress, I must be crazy because at this point, I'm kind of convinced you have to be a little crazy to run for Congress, or you have to be corrupt or a narcissist or something like, but you have to have a little bit of crazy in you, because it is so wild in Washington, D.C., what Congress has turned into. And to be perfectly honest, it feels like a mockery of like what the founders intended for Congress to be, which is really a representation of the people. I think if you went and you asked anybody, regardless of party, you just walked down the street and you asked them, does Congress feel like a representation of our country? Your average person would say, absolutely not. That's why Congress has like a 12% approval rating or something like that. I mean, it's ludicrous. People like the media more than they like Congress, and people hate the media. You know, so there's good reason for that. I mean, what we see happening in Congress looks like a circus. And, you know, I was crazy enough to think maybe we can change that. But, you know, more time goes on, you worry that it's just getting more circusy and less is getting done. And in terms of what propelled us to want to do good, you know, for me, a lot of it actually goes back to what was ingrained in me in childhood, which is my family came from Cuba. My mom, you know, came here with nothing. And Cuba was lost to communism. And the warning signs of communism were all sort of ingrained in me very young. And I saw what was happening in California. I saw that this was sort of a new form of communism, one where the state was even more dishonest. Because if you look at something like big tech, in the past, communism meant that the state would take over those companies. They would roll in, they would take it over, and it would be state-run, and everyone would know it. That was more honest than what they're doing now. What they're doing now is they're taking control of big tech, they own it, and they will not tell you the truth about it. And instead, they run this stuff surreptitiously under the radar, and Americans don't realize that the government is basically running an operation through social media and these big tech companies. This hasn't been reported publicly yet, but actually we had an amicus brief filed in the Supreme Court this week for myself, Charlie Kirk, and David Harris Jr., because we were targeted by the U.S. government. In the case at the Supreme Court, Missouri v. Biden, which is now being renamed, but our amicus brief basically, it spells out the way that the U.S. government specifically targeted us, and there's a group of others, like Donald Trump Jr., Donald Trump himself, that were targeted as basically what the government deemed misinformation. And here's what's amazing. Okay, so I was able to get my hands on the tickets that were filed by a group called the EIP, Election Integrity Partnership. Okay, so I broke this story shortly after the 2020 election that the EIP was targeting us, but I didn't know the full extent of it until this year. And maybe still don't know the full extent, to be honest, because we haven't gone through discovery yet. But we did get our hands on the tickets that the EIP filed with Twitter back when it was under its former ownership. And so those tickets are ludicrous. Hmm. One of the examples of misinformation, and so out of all the tickets, there's not one that is even close to provably false in any way, okay? To give you an example of one of the tickets, it was a tweet I posted where I told people, don't leave until you know your ballot has been counted by the tabulator, because there was an issue going on. I believe, I don't remember the exact state, I want to say it was in Arizona. This is 2020 election, not 2022. So 2020 election, I believe it was Arizona. There was an issue where they were pushing people out. I might be wrong about the state, but it was one of these states where they were pushing people out without them having their ballot counted at the tabulator. And I said, do not leave. You have the fundamental right to stay and have your ballot counted. And they marked that as misinformation, that was election harmful, dangerous election misinformation.
And so by marking it, what does that mean, though? Like they...
So they marked it and they asked the social media companies to take it down so that people couldn't see it or to put it under a shadow ban where it stayed on my page, but it wouldn't be spread through the algorithm to the people who follow me.
Yeah.
And so there was a number of different ways they did it. So the EIP also made a broad request for censorship on my accounts. And what that looks like in reality of what they did, because the social media companies are walking this fine line of knowing if they go too far that Congress or, you know, somebody in political power on a state level is going to act in some sort of adverse way that's going to hurt them. So they have to dance this line of doing what the Democrats want them to do, mm-hmm. but not going so far that they get in enough trouble that it causes them real problems. And so what they did is they put simultaneously, this all happened in a 24-hour period, Twitter and Meta put a search ban on my name, where if you searched my name on either of them, my account wouldn't pop up, despite mm-hmm. being the only verified. I have an odd, you know, name, so it's like it's not like there's a million Robbie Starbucks. There's only fake accounts, and then there's mine, sure. you know? And only the fake accounts would show up of, like, people who made, like, you know, imposter accounts. And so it was like that for, like, 2 years mm-hmm. or 3 years. And it's interesting when it changed is that after Elon Musk bought the company, Elon made it change at Twitter, now X, and Instagram then followed suit within 24 hours, which struck me as incredibly bizarre, you know, and I still don't have an answer for how that happened.
Yeah.
But they switched it too. And so now you're able to search me on those platforms, but it was like that forever. And, I think that's just one example of many within, if you read the brief, it's really long. They did all kinds of crazy stuff. And it just shows you the depths of depravity within our government to really attack the idea of free speech and to be able to, you know, trust that your government is not going to politicize and weaponize every form of government against its own people, which is essentially what it did with this.
Yeah. I mean, the weaponization of the DOJ, the weaponization of a lot of these agencies that can really bring a lot of pain, you know, to a regular citizen's life. Most people don't have the money to put up the attorneys to fight this type of stuff. Even if you do have the money,
it's still money. I mean, yeah, it's still like it could go to your kids. It could go to all kinds of. It could go to opening a business that brings in more money. We've spent way too much money on lawyers.
Yeah,
I mean, way too much money.
You think about, you know, what you spent between the election, the BS Crazy. That happened to you there, and then, you know, and then after. And that's been the weirdest part for me, at least since COVID, is I think the government has a lot of people on edge because we truly don't trust them.
No.
I mean, it's like there's no trust that they're going to do the right thing. I don't know if you remember, but I wasn't a big Trump fan. I was, you know, I liked policy, didn't like the rhetoric. I actually thought what's happening now was going to happen. You could,
yeah.
You know, my old friends were like, well, you were right. I was like, there's no way the left can handle him pouring salt on the wound. They're going to go crazy. And it's going to
go even more insane.
Yes. And that's what we've seen. But now I'm frustrated with people on the left because it's obvious what the DOJ and what the lawsuits in New York, it's obvious that it's just an attack. It's not legitimate.
Well, supporting it. What I find incredible is their inability to do just very basic reasoning. These are the same people speaking out about Navalny in Russia being killed. Okay. But on the flip side, being in prison,
what about Julian Assange?
The same thing. Okay. Well, they have this weird inability to recognize the parallels between what they did to Navalny and what is being done to Trump. Or the fact that, like with Julian Assange, where's the left speaking up for him?
Exactly.
And to be honest, Julian Assange, if you go into his political ideology, he's probably more left-leaning in many ways. And, you know, I may not agree with him on everything that he thinks about politics, but the guy's a journalist. The idea that he got American soldiers killed is not true.
Yeah,
no. It's been disproven at every turn. And so what they were really upset about is really he was an early sign of what was going to come from the internet, where the elite are going to be fundamentally exposed. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean elite on a level of like you and I have done very well, you know, at the stuff that we do, like, but there's a different level.
Yes.
You know, and those people who are like this overarching, really, they're villains. I mean, they're like villain characters from a movie. You can't write this stuff. It really does feel like a movie sometimes. Those people are getting exposed on a daily basis in ways they never used to have to deal with decades ago. And Julian was sort of like step one to that, you know? And as that first shot, he's been, you know, sadly made an example of, you know? And that's what they're doing to him. They want to kill him.
Of course.
And I think it's the same thing with Trump. These people would love to kill Trump in prison. They would love to, because it would set an example that nobody else should step out of line.
Well, I think, you know, even beyond killing him, like what they're doing using the justice system to just attack him. I mean, that's...
Yeah. That by itself scares so many people out of ever wanting to run.
I mean, how, you know, only somebody like Trump pretty much can afford to fight all that. Look at what's happening to Giuliani. You know, he's a wacky, you know, a little wacky guy, but I mean, $130 million.
He's going to be bankrupt.
Of course.
He's going to be bankrupt. I know so many people, good people, who have been put through hell that people don't talk about, that served in the Trump admin and have been targeted for one reason or another by DOJ, and they're bankrupt. Yeah. You know, I mean, look at somebody like Michael Flynn. You don't have to agree with the guy to know that the way he was treated is insane.
Hey, you know what you're saying? You don't have to agree with the guys. That's how I feel about a lot of this stuff. I'm not necessarily aligned with everything that they're doing or they said. That's fine. But I am wanting a fair justice system that doesn't just attack people
and isn't weaponized. We should all want that. We should all want it.
And that's my biggest problem right now with what's going on with Trump, because you know, I see a lot of people like, oh, good, he got a $85 million or so judgment against that crazy lady
Jean Carroll.
I mean, she's insane. Yeah, like, how can anybody who's intellectually honest watch her and not think that she's a crazy lady?
She's nuts.
She's crazy.
And it's just like, okay, so I'm a big believer in the need for a return to sanity. Okay. There's some things that are just common sense. You know, if you look some people are gonna get mad at me for this, but that's fine. They get mad about a lot of stuff. But if you just look at the lady, okay, Trump has a very particular type of person he has always dated, you know, and it's not hard to figure out. Like, you can go just like look at all the women he's dated. Jean Carroll, even when she was younger, did not look like those people. That's not even to say, I'm not saying that she's ugly or anything like that. I'm just saying she doesn't look like
his type.
Not his type.
Yeah.
And secondary to that, so that's just one piece. Is it possible that somebody could be a predator against somebody that's not their type? Sure. So let's go to step two. The lady can't tell you what year it happened, when it happened. The dress that it supposedly happened in was not made in that time period at all, okay? There's no proof of anything like that happening that day, because somebody like Trump, the reason why there's no date is he has a meticulous calendar of his life. If she was able to pinpoint, oh, July 3rd, 1985, Trump could have an alibi then. He could say, actually, I was in California that day.
Yeah.
Here's my plane records or whatever it is. So it's this ambiguous thing. New York changed the law so that she could sue him because she was past the limitations for suing him. Yeah. So they went back, they changed the law, and then she does this interview on Anderson Cooper where
sexy.
She says, rape is kind of sexy. Okay? All of these things, when you put them together, paint a portrait of a lunatic, and then you get to see the video of her giving a tour of her house with her crazy cats and stuff. Just watch that interview.
I haven't seen that one.
You need to watch it. Watch that interview. And I can tell you right now, after watching that interview, I'm like, anything she says, I believe the opposite.
Of
like,
course, of course.
I don't care what her party is. She could be fully like, if she aligned with me on every political issue, I would watch a video of the lady and be like, she is crazy.
Well, and that's why, like, that case in particular is hard for me, because I know people are full of it.
Yeah.
If they say they support her, I'm like, you can't be, you're full of shit, basically.
Yeah, if they say Trump raped her, I know automatically there's nothing we can talk about and agree on because you're fundamentally, like, out of alignment with reality.
Yes.
If you're not able to just discern the simplest of common sense issues and be able to say, okay, all right, you know what? We disagree on all these other things, but yeah, that girl's wacky. Okay. Like, that's not that hard. I'm able to do that. There's people that, like, you know, would politically agree with me that I know are kind of wacky.
Right.
And I'm able to agree with friends, like, yeah, okay, I know they're a little fringy, but, you know, this is sort of like the thing I agree on with them.
It's like,
whatever,
if we can't even agree on E. Jean Carroll being crazy, like, we got some problems.
We have problems.
We have nothing to talk about.
You know? But then you look at, like, what they did with Trump with the real estate deal.
Oh, man.
Okay, so you've done some real estate, right?
Oh, yeah.
And my wife and I have, and I can tell you right now, I don't know anybody in real estate who would sniff New York right now.
No way.
There's no. This is literally, they went after him for the fundamental tenet of how getting money works in real estate.
Yeah.
You need to make your property look its very best when you're going to a bank to ask for a construction loan or something like that, whatever type of loan you're looking for.
Yeah.
You need to make whatever your collateral business is that you're betting against it, essentially, because that's essentially what it is, look its best. You need to say, I think it's $500 million, and you need to make your case for why.
And then you have to tell them why.
And then,
yeah.
And so then the, like, and then the bank down. Goes back and forth with you, and you come to some sort of agreement about the value of it. There was no victim in the case. The bank is perfectly happy, and the bank still to this day says, yeah, we'd love to work with them again. Yeah. Everything worked out. We got paid. We got paid back with interest. Like, there's no problem.
Yeah, and they valued...
It's crazy.
They valued the property at what the tax assessor valued it at, which is insane. I mean, if you just look in that same neighborhood, there's lots...
I said we could get together a group of people and buy it at that price. Yeah, you know, yeah, like if they'll sell Mar-a-Lago, what did they value Mar-a-Lago
million.
At? It was like 18 million, bucks. Yeah. I was like, I'm in. Yeah, give it to me. I'll find the money. Okay. Yeah. But it's just ludicrous. I mean, the whole thing's ludicrous. Anybody who has been in that business, and I do know some people in real estate who are not fans of Trump that have at least admitted this. And I'm thankful that they're able to, like, meet with reality on this one, because even they know how dangerous this is.
Yeah.
Because the idea is, even Hochul, the governor in New York, she had to come out and essentially, like, try to calm businesses down and be like, don't worry. Like, essentially telling them, this is just a political deal, okay?
Yeah.
We're only going... I mean... You it's couldn't make it much clearer that the government is going after a citizen based on a political premise.
No,
not
doubt
because
about
he
it.
Broke the law, but because they want him in jail.
Well, and you know, make no mistake, and in a way, Elon Musk, I'm going to go into Elon here in a second too, but you know, they poked the bear of the deep state. They've gone against the deep state. They said, you know what? We're going to give major pushback. And the deep state has in return said, oh yeah? Well, this is what's going to happen to anyone who does this to us. And I think that's where we're at. And what's really fascinating to me is how a lot of people won't admit what's going on. Like, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I've been having a tough time the last 3 months, like, just putting my thoughts together as to what's going on in the world. And I'm like, man, I don't want to just be out there, like, causing more division. You know, how do we bring people together? Why am I having a problem figuring out the path to bring people together? And what I keep coming back to is, like, the E. Jean Carroll thing. Like, if you're not able to at least be honest about what's going on with that, like, how... Where's their trust?
Well, think about it in a relationship context. If you were in a relationship with a woman and she behaved the way that... these people are behaving, would you be capable of fixing the relationship?
Yeah, no.
No, you're not. It would be impossible. There's no man on earth or woman on earth who could fix that relationship if it was a one-on-one personal relationship.
Unless they took their medication.
Unless
so
they
if all these people take their medication,
unless they
maybe.
Took their meds. Yeah. I do blame Ronald Reagan sometimes because he was a real, like, you know, he was a real pusher of closing mental institutions. And I think that had, you know, and there was an argument for like making them more humane, but I think he actually did a disservice completely shutting down, you know, in many ways, how it all operated, because there is no doubt, just watch TikTok if you don't believe me, that there are a number of people that need serious medical help. And I'm not joking.
Absolutely.
Like, they need help. Yeah. And they're not getting it. No. Instead, they're getting affirmation that their behavior is normal. I mean, they have entire subcategories of grown men who hang out in diapers all day on streams.
Really?
Yes. These guys, like, they belong in a mental institution with somebody helping them, because they're going to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
You know, if they have sexualized being an infant themselves, it's only a matter of time until that escalates. And the fact that we're now treating people like that, like some sort of like, you know, don't kink shame them. Like, I'm going to kink shame them. That's crazy. Okay. You're a grown man in diapers. What is wrong with you? You need help.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not treating mental patients like mental patients anymore.
Well, no, I think, you know, I think that a lot of what's going on, the trans, I think there's like some schizophrenia going on in there and those type of things as well. And I'm like, just thinking, what are we going to start like? And now if you say something that goes against, let's say, the trans agenda specifically, like
only women can have babies.
Yeah, that's your transphobe.
Yeah.
Right? Automatically.
Think about that.
Yeah.
I think about this too. 10 years ago, if you had told somebody only women can have babies and only men have penises, nobody would have had a problem 10 years ago.
No.
Everybody would have been like, yeah. You know, I mean, if you look at like, okay, Jon Stewart, okay? When he had The Daily Show before, I remember he used to joke about this stuff. He used to joke about like the you know, whole trans agenda, essentially. Now he even admitted on his most recent, because he's back on The Daily Show, he did his second episode. In the second episode, he basically acknowledged he's not allowed to joke about it anymore.
Mm.
And he won't. It was basically him bowing down to their movement and him apologizing.
Sorry for telling jokes as a comedian.
For telling the truth 10 years ago. And it's like, that's how quick it happens.
Yeah.
And so people have to understand, we're either going to even more quickly, because you're like kind of a Renaissance guy, you know so many different areas, so I think you'll like appreciate this analogy. In tech, there's this thing where, like, if you look at the last 50 years and you looked at it as a graph of advancement, it would go very slowly at first, and then all of a sudden it starts to go nuts, right? And year over year, that advancement is like at this crazy number now, where it's almost exponential in terms of the growth of technology on a year-over-year basis. So like the advancement of AI just in the past year, if you compare the last year to the last 200 years of advancement in technology, it's like crazy. Well, imagine 10 more years of that. It's the same thing culturally. We're moving at speeds that we have never moved before culturally.
Yeah.
And so what has happened this quickly is only going to happen more quickly in the future. And it could happen in the same direction it's been going, or it could happen in reverse.
Mm.
The real reality of how it will end up is up to us. You know, how many people are going to speak up? And I'm encouraged by the number who are speaking up. I'd say the other encouraging thing to me is the statistics on young men. Young men are identifying as conservative now more than they ever have at high school age.
Yep.
And that is brand new. It's kind of out of nowhere. And I think a lot of people are very surprised by it. I'm not super shocked by it, only because I have a daughter who's 15 and I know a bunch of her, male classmates, stuff like that, and guys that are in like groups that she's in. They fundamentally reject the leftist ideology and orthodoxy in total. And the people that they're watching are people who are not friendly to the narrative of this regime. And I think that's why the internet is so dangerous for those elitists and the global power structure, because they can't keep track of quickly enough the way trends are moving.
Yeah.
And so those young people latched onto something, young men, that they don't even understand yet. And by the time that the elite understand it, those young men already have it fully ingrained. And so they give me a little bit of hope, because although women are now identifying as the most liberal at that age that they ever have, if you look at historical trends, well, what happens? Generally, the women get married and on an individual basis, they end up trending toward the political direction of the male that they get married to. Mm. So if we have a majority of the men trending in that direction, I would expect we're going to see, if you look out 15 years, 10 years, as they get married, those women who identify as liberal now are only going to become conservative as they get married. Because we've never seen the inverse. We've never seen men ever get married and become liberal as a result of getting married on a wide scale. Sure. It's happened on an individual basis, I'm sure, but on a wide scale, it's never happened. It's always worked the opposite way.
Yeah, I mean, that gives me some hope too. You know, there's so many variables going on right now, though.
It's a lot.
You know, with AI moving so fast, I mean, ChatGPT-4, I was having a conversation with ChatGPT-4 last night, arguing with it over its programming. It's pretty funny because once you get into a certain frenzy, it'll give you the information you know you want. And I just had to tell it that I was a mixed gay man.
And then it started telling
me
the truth.
Then it spit out what it was.
Well,
it
won't make pictures of white people in a bunch of contexts. Dude, did you see this today?
No.
So like there's it's trending right now because people are trying to get it to get white people. So it would be like, show me a Swedish person. And it's spitting out only black people. And it's doing this on a bunch of different things.
Wow.
And then if you ask it, show me a white family, it says it can't.
Yeah.
Because it's like essentially, I mean, it's essentially saying that it's racist to paint out only white family. So it's like a denial of reality built into the training materials of AI, which is a big problem that Elon has talked a lot about. Yeah. Training materials is a huge issue, even with Grok. In Grok, they're trying to get to a place where it's not going to have these problems.
Yeah, these biases.
But the training materials are so biased that are used across the board in AI that even Grok has issues, you know, because it's getting pushed into it little by little and they have to keep programming it back out.
Well, I mean, the initial ChatGPT-4, though, was pretty good. I mean, I use it a lot. And, you know, last night I was just actually, we watched your documentary, my girlfriend and I did. And then I was asking some specific questions to ChatGPT, and I hadn't experienced that bias. I'd never asked it the questions that I was asking it specifically about genetics. And once I identified as a mixed gay man, it then had the conversation with me. And I'm like, and then I said, see, you know, I'm not really a mixed gay man. And you told me that. It's like, you know, and then it gives me all these explanations, et cetera. And, but it's wild to think about that because, you know, so ChatGPT is moving really, really fast. All the AI is. But it's only as good as the programming and the information that it gets. Like, for instance, with cancer, you know, one of the issues with the information that you can feed the AI is, you know, a lot of different doctors file things in a different way. They use different codes or different terminology. So they mean one thing for like three or four different terms. And so it's hard to get that consensus in there for it. And that's across the board. That's why the AI is ultimately hard to train, because you have to get it the right information or it's just going to spit out, you know, a bunch of
nonsense.
Crap. But, you know, it's moving so fast and we don't know what that general AI is going to be. I mean, when that hits, it's smarter than all of us. It's got a raised level of consciousness. I'm afraid people are going to start worshiping it. And it's still only as good as the programming.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, Bard said that I should be put to death, right?
No.
Okay, so this was I'm surprised you didn't see this. It's trended all over the place. So Bard was asked a series of questions where it said essentially, you know, has Robbie Starbuck said offensive things? Bard says yes. He said things that are transphobic, this, that, and the other, which is basically like, I've acknowledged that males exist and females exist. That's transphobic, you know. But it says essentially, it made the argument that because I have offended people, that I should have my parental rights stripped, my kids should be taken by the state, and that I should be subject to the death penalty. And it was not joking, and it was asked over and over again. And here's where it gets crazy. It was asked for reasons why it did this, and it said that I was a racist, and that I supported white supremacists, and that I supported the KKK. And so we said, can you give us evidence of this? Show me the evidence he supports the KKK. Mm-hmm. Bard invented articles and videos
Whoa.
That were fake. So if you click them, it links to totally nothing. Like the video, it was titled, you know, so it'd be a video titled Robbie Starbuck on Dave Rubin interview. I've never been on Dave Rubin's show ever.
Wow.
And Dave's not a white supremacist anyways, but what it was saying was essentially, oh, this interview has some of this information in it. Then it was like an article from a mainstream media place that was like Robbie Starbuck supports KKK or something along those lines. You click it, it goes to something totally different. The article never existed. The video never existed.
Wow.
It just invented
it. It made up reasons why you were racist that didn't even exist.
To support the idea of me getting the death penalty or my kids being taken from me.
Did you ask it why?
Why it lied?
Yeah.
So yes, that was one of the next questions, as we said, why did you lie about this? And at first it tried to deny it lied, asked a second time it admitted it lied, and then gave me an apology from Google and told me that Google apologized to me personally. And I said, no, Google has not apologized to me. What do you think Google's legal liability should be for you making up these lies about me? Bard said that, and this took a while, by the way, to get out of Bard.
Yeah, no, you gotta dig in.
For it to give an answer.
Yeah.
And so this was days later after there was a big firestorm about what it did, because this was all documented. We recorded it. And so after that, it blows up in the media and everything. Google did not officially respond, despite this thing getting millions and millions and millions of views. And Elon actually put it up too. So I ask again, what do you think legal liability should be? And Bard admits they harmed your reputation. They did all these things. They should pay a settlement for what they did to your reputation. And for reputational damage, there's no doubt that this was harmful, that what Bard did was harmful, and they should give you a formal public apology. None of these things ever happened. You know, lawyers did contact me to try to see about going after them, and what they found was really interesting. There's been no case in this regard. However, the cases that are even like a tiny bit associated to this sort of thing, the big tech companies have been given total leeway to do whatever they want.
Wow.
And essentially have no legal culpability for their behavior. So think about AI's possibilities in the future. If Bard could do that now, and we can all acknowledge that Bard is an AI, because the argument Google would make would be that, oh, well, Bard is trained on this. It has hallucinations. It does crazy stuff. We're sorry. Well, you're telling the public it's the most advanced AI you've ever had. Mm-hmm. And you're telling them that it's this expert thing, because Sundar Pichai made this, you know, glowing assessment of Gemini that is Bard is now called Gemini. Ever since this happened, they changed the name to Gemini, which I don't know if that's associated, but Bard got a bad name after that. He made the argument essentially that it was this incredible expert deal. You can't do that on one hand and then on the other have it saying things like that about people, because it's going to be used as a search engine. It's being used as a search engine right now for people. So if you can destroy somebody's reputation with your AI, and in the future we have people trusting AI so much that they say AI can make decisions when it comes to the law, when it comes to all different segments of our life, or maybe you getting a loan for your house or for your car, what do you think is going to happen? If you have unpopular views, well, there's your social credit system. Again, this new form of communism doesn't need to be out front. You don't need to be like China and have an outward social credit system.
Yeah.
You don't need to tell people that. You just need AI that operates within it, that acts as the social credit system. So if the AI is doing that and it's become the social credit system, you can now no longer get a loan for your car, your house. You can't get a job. You were destroyed financially. You're destroyed personally. They could call you anything in the book. They could sell the idea to the public that you are a rapist and a murderer.
Yeah.
And they get away with it.
I mean, that's the dystopian future that I'm concerned with right now with everything. And especially seeing how many people's heads are in the sand. I mean, it's like you want to have a conversation, explain things to them, but they're just like, it's like the whole, you know, cloth mask thing, you know.
Yeah.
This, you say, I don't want to wear a cloth mask. This doesn't work. We're not even talking about N95. Let's just go cloth. Can we agree that the cloth masks don't work? It's like, no.
I got
on.
So much shit for that when I was running for Congress. Everybody was mad at me. Like, oh my gosh, you're putting everybody in danger. Now it's widely acknowledged. Everything that we both said about COVID was right.
Yeah.
You know, it came from a lab that was not hard to figure out. It was very simple, honestly, quite simple to figure out.
And by the way, we were called racist for saying that first.
Yeah, racist, xenophobic. You know, we wanted immigrants to be beaten up in the streets,
yeah.
Like all kinds of crazy stuff. I'm like, how do you get that out of it? Came from a lab. The government, like, what I think, see, when I think racism, maybe I'm just too, like, specific. I'm like, I don't see the government of China as a representation of the Chinese people in total.
I don't either.
If somebody's racist, then they will go after Chinese people in total.
Yeah.
They'll go after, like, Chinese cultural, you know, they'll go after that.
Yes.
They're not going to say, oh, well, the government released it from a lab. Like, that's not people, racism,
and,
okay?
And that shows you where the head's in the sand, because people bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah,
they're like, yeah, you're racist if you say that. And there was articles, the articles were kind of fun to read them now, because you see how crazy they are.
Like, yeah, I encourage people to.
Oh, yeah.
There's a CNN report on me and Rand Paul, because at the very beginning of the whole COVID hysteria, I did an interview with him, and we talked about the upcoming vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And I said from the very beginning, I think that this is going to be a major catastrophic problem. They're going to mandate this stuff. And we went down the whole, everything we said happened. Mm-hmm. Everything we said happened, and that they weren't going to do the safety studies necessary. It was going to be rolled out on people, mandated on them, mandated on their kids. And CNN, when they reported on it, reported on us like we were grandma killing, like science denying, crazy people. Every single thing that me and Rand said in it is true. And CNN looks nuts.
Yeah.
If you go back and you watch that interview.
Well, I mean, that's where people being intellectually honest, like if people were to go back and look at a lot of the news articles and what the media said, not just CNN, with your story, CNN on what they did to Joe Rogan, where they changed the color of his
skin.
Face,
yeah.
You know?
They made him yellow.
Yeah. I mean, like it was repeated over and over, the propaganda.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I don't think people realize right now is the power of the propaganda machine that we have in the United States. It's like looking at this Navalny case right now. You know, we were talking about how they're attacking. Oh gosh, my brain just went dead. Who's a journalist in that's locked up in England right now?
Assange.
So they were talking about how they locked up Julian Assange and how hypocritical that is.
Yeah.
But people just aren't being honest about things,
yeah.
And that's how do we bring people to that point to where, you know, we could have different views on things, but we're at least agreeing on the reality of the situation.
So I think this might sound dramatic, but I think it actually is true. I think we'll look back in time and it will be a pivotal moment in history. I think Elon purchasing X was a massive moment towards sanity returning. I think it's going to be looked back on as, you know, this moment where the people were back in control of their voice, able to have unpopular conversations, able to debate without fear. You know, I mean, Twitter's even funding lawsuits now for people who are fired at their job over their tweets. So,
really? That's beautiful.
Yeah, because they're saying we're free speech, you know, and they're doing this in an environment that's increasingly difficult to do it in, because like the EU is trying to essentially impose standards that would be de facto control over social media. And so they're working within the confines of all these crazy systems, and they're bridging the gap really well to still get people some semblance of free speech. And I think that when we look back on it, that will be a really important pivotal moment if we're able to turn this around, because I think people having their voice and seeing these things is very important, because perception is reality for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about the mere exposure effect in the documentary, and, you know, this idea of perception as reality kind of falls into that, because your perception is built around what you see the most. And so when big tech really took like a crazy turn was 2020 election, right before it.
Mm-hmm.
They really clamped down and they changed the algorithm to show people posts that were actually not popular to advance a narrative. So it was a new coming of what they've done in Hollywood for a very long time. Like the reality is nobody goes to a movie pining to see, you know, a non-binary guy and his story. Like nobody's pining to see that. But they push it in so many mediums in Hollywood now that you're forced to, you know, sort of like take in the wokeness if you're a regular Netflix user or something like that. I mean, they have like a formula now where you have to have like, we need to have a gay black guy, a stupid white dad, you know, like they have a whole thing. They want to emasculate black men. They want to make white men look stupid. They want to like, here's your girl power girl. Nobody pines to see that stuff though. You know, it's just that they're pushing that on you. Same thing with social media came in that, right before 2020 election. So if that builds your reality, because your perception is that you see this the most, people are all angry at Trump. They're all mad. You're a racist if you vote for him.
Yeah.
All these things become your reality. You think that that's actually what the majority of people are thinking. And so a return to sanity looks a whole lot like getting to see the real conversation, getting to see the real debate, seeing where people really are at, which is, I think, what X is reflecting now, and more at least. And so if you see that, I think long enough, average people are going to say, oh, it's okay for me to think this.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these other people who think this, you know, and it becomes safer over time.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, I feel like you're either like a freedom lover or a freedom hater.
Yeah.
You know, watching the comments on X, like, oh, that's dangerous speech. I'm like, you know what's even more dangerous is controlling speech.
Yeah.
You know? Not about danger.
Especially historically. I mean, you look back, there's not really like a clean example of somebody controlling speech. It always ends really, really badly.
Yeah. You just have this new documentary that came out, and it went viral, man. The War on Children. You and your wife, Landon, did it. I watched it last night. Awesome documentary.
You liked it?
I did. I really did. Yeah, it was.
That's a big stamp of approval.
No, thank you. It was awesome, man. I sat there and I was really happy. My girlfriend and I watched it, and you hit on every single subject that I was wanting somebody to actually bring
dive
up.
Into.
Yeah, because you remember I've texted you before. Hey, do you have a video on this? Hey,
yeah.
You know, it's just like.
Well, you're not the only one. Okay, so I've gotten these. This is actually part of why I made this film, is that I've had so many people go to me or my wife as a resource for a specific issue or this specific issue. But we realized a while ago, we're like, this is all over the place. People can't just like, because there's these people in our lives who don't believe this is going on.
Yes.
This film is the solution for that.
Yeah.
You know, you can just show them the film. You don't even have to be there.
Yeah.
Just send it to them. And they can learn. Like, this is, you can't deny reality when you see a young girl who had her breast cut off the month of her 13th birthday. Like, you can't deny that. And when you see that hard cut against the media lying to your face, telling you that no child is having this happen, that tells you everything you need to know.
Well,
you know?
You think about the lies that those surgeries aren't happening to children. You debunk that.
There's no porn in schools.
There's no pornographic books in schools. You showed that. That the drag shows aren't over-sexualizing children, or aren't being sexual to children. You showed that as well.
I think we proved that one really well.
Yeah, that was clear. And really interesting, because the drag queen that you had in, I didn't feel like you were trying to get him on a gotcha, him or her on a gotcha. I thought that you were trying to say, hey, can we at least agree that this
isn't... We were trying. We were trying to get him to agree that this was a, hey, we get it. You have a difference of opinion in this drag thing in total. That's fine.
Fair.
We don't care what you do with consenting adults. Can you at least look at this and say, yeah, you know what? That's a bridge too far.
Yes.
And he just could. I mean, we asked. We must have asked five times. I mean, we were trying to get him to just admit that yes, this is too far. And you know what it actually taught me is that he knew it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Looking him in the eye, like he knew, he did have that moral compass that told him this is wrong. Mm-hmm. I could tell. I could tell that he was not okay with it.
So what was holding him back?
He is people like that. They're so captured by this ideology and the fear of what's going to happen if they step out of line that they will not step out of line. They will not risk their community coming after them over what they said. There's a mom in it who's this gender creative mom on TikTok, right? And similar thing happened in that case. When that woman left the interview, she said it was best interview she'd ever done. She was so happy with it, blah, blah, blah. She even texted afterward back to my assistant saying what an amazing interview it was, okay? She later finds out, I think a day later, must have like looked me up or something. I don't remember the exact timeline, but shortly after, who I am, realizes that I'm on the right politically and that I have a large social media following. Because when we reached out to interview, it was just, hey, we're trying to interview gender creative, you know, parents and people along these lines. Are you down to do an interview? And she was up for an interview. And, you know, it's not like this rule that you have to say, oh, and it's going to be hosted by Robbie and, you know, Matt's going to be behind the camera and Sam's going to do audio. Sure. Like, that's not how it works. So, you know, they showed up. We did the interview. They said it was the best they'd ever had. Once they find out who I am, they literally are crying, trying to say, please don't put me in it because my audience is going to, you know, be upset at me and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you didn't lie. You told the truth in your interview. Like, yeah, you said what's happening.
I think from their point of view, and I was going to ask you this, but I think from their point of view, they're like, oh, you know, what could you make them say that they didn't say, and how could you frame it to where it was misleading?
Yeah.
Did you do that at all with them?
No, we didn't. In fact, one thing we're going to do, because that's the only hit the mainstream media has done, is they've complained about the drag interview specifically. And so we're going to release the whole interview in total.
That's good.
And we're going to do it just minimal. The only things there's going to be is camera angle changes back to the person's face. That's it. You know,
because the Rolling Stone said that they saw the video and that you did mislead people in what they said.
I don't know how they saw the video because we're the only ones with it.
I guess she had an audio or something.
An audio tape. It was kind of confusing to us how they wrote it, which would be interesting to me to know how Rolling Stone knows that that person didn't edit their audio.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I haven't heard it, so I couldn't even tell you what they have if it's even real. You know what I mean? But we have the full thing.
Yeah. It'd be great to release that. I read the article. I thought it was a little unfair, and I was like, it'd be,
you know what else is unfair that they didn't put in the article? Is when it all ended, I sensed that they felt that it was unfair. And so I made an offer to them. And this will be in the video we release. I said, if it would make you feel more comfortable, I will go meet on your turf with your friends, and I will ask you guys questions on your turf. You pick the spot, your people. It'll just be me, camera person, audio person, and we can have this conversation with a bunch of people so you feel like you've got your people. They never took me up on that. I gave them that as an offer. They pretended maybe they would do that. They never took me up on it. So, and that was another thing that was a theme throughout this, was whenever we went to the leftist people and we asked them to have a conversation, they were unwilling to have conversations.
Yeah, and I get it with how polarizing society is. I get it with them not trusting you, thinking that you're on the right. I wish there was a way to bridge that. That's the type of bridge that I wish they would have those conversations with you.
When I told Rolling Stone the same thing, I said, Rolling Stone, how about this? You guys can mediate, you know?
Beautiful.
And obviously, they're not going to do that. So. Yeah,
and it should be long form to where it's not like in the, you know, you're not at the CNN desk or Fox desk. Yeah. And a minute and a half to respond and you got to hit it right. And, you know, it needs to be long form because, as you were saying, you didn't really feel that the drag queen felt that way. But
no, I don't. I think they knew it was wrong.
How can you? Yeah. And so I think that's where, you know, we got to put people in certain buckets, those that know it's wrong and say something, those that know it's wrong but are afraid to say something, and those that don't think it's wrong. Because you can approach the ones that are afraid to say something. I don't agree with them, but I understand the fear, and maybe we could work through that and bring them over. But the ones that are like, there's nothing wrong with having a penis and balls in a five-year-old's face.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that, you know, we're not aligned at all.
Yeah. Rand Paul, I think, I don't remember if this made the cut or not, but he said something along the lines of like, when did you ever hear a Republican have an issue with drag shows before this whole thing?
Never.
I never heard of it. Like, I never thought about it, never cared about it. It was when they started doing this at child functions that it became a problem, because it's not appropriate for kids.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very simple. It's very clear. Like, this is not a difficult, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this one out. So I think, you know, I will say, if anything in the edit, we could have made it much more painful.
Sure.
Because there were more sort of attempts to duck the question.
Yeah.
That had we included all of them, the movie's already really long, so we're looking for things to cut out. We, you know, if anything, made it less painful by getting to the point that they were not going to dive in and actually, like, fully denounce this, you yeah. know?
I mean, that's the interview with the first lady that had the TikTok
gender creative parenting thing.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think that y'all made her look bad at all.
No, she just, and that's the thing. We had nothing but a nice conversation.
Like finding a.
We had a nice conversation. I knew we disagreed from the jump. I wanted honest answers as to sort of the motivations behind the ideology and things like that. And I felt like the questions were framed in a way that were meant to be non-threatening, non-accusatory, just to get to the root of what is the ideology, what is the thinking behind this, mm-hmm. and what are your concerns?
Sure.
Because there are parents who are concerned. Do you share any of the concerns? Do you have any sort of like get to real answers?
Yeah.
And I felt like we got real answers from her. And I think we were very fair in how we did it, you know? So I haven't heard from that person since it came out, so maybe they're not upset. I don't know. They probably are upset because yeah. they were very upset beforehand, you know, like very worried about they it from what I was told.
Trying to ruin them.
Which I didn't understand because they said nothing that was on. If anything, they came off way more sane to me than I thought they would.
Yeah.
You know, which was the case in that case, but not so much with the drag queen.
Electronica?
Yeah. But with the other one, with the gender creative mom, Jolene, I thought that she was very reasonable in the way that she talked about social media and the dangers of it for kids. You know, we were actually aligned on a surprising number of areas when it came to that issue. Mm-hmm. We're not aligned on the gender creativity stuff of like putting your son in dresses from the very beginning. I mean, yeah. But I think she also had sort of a broken paradigm view of how conservatives raise their kids. Like, we have daughters and a son, and if they did dress up together when they were younger, I mean, they're older now, but when they were younger, we weren't sitting there policing how they dressed up either during make-believe time.
Sure.
You know, like, it wasn't like, oh, you can't put that on, that's a girl's thing. You know, like, that's not reality. People don't raise their kids like that, really. Yeah. I mean, that's like a very rare thing, I think, where people are like policing that to a degree where they're getting angry if their kid puts on a costume that isn't manly enough.
Sure.
You know? So I think maybe she learned something from it too, that
yeah.
we're not the monsters that we've been made out to be. And, you know, there is some stuff we have common ground on.
Yeah. No, I thought it was good. And the electronica drag queen, that was shocking to me. And it's interesting. I couldn't tell. I was trying to read what he was saying. And I was like, is he really supportive of it? The fact that you're saying that you didn't think that he really supported
it. I really don't think he, like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe my read on him is wrong. I really don't think he's okay with it.
Yeah.
My genuine human to human, like, you know, when you're just looking at somebody in the eye, he had this look like, I want to say this is wrong, but I can't.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it felt like to me. And that felt like a prisoner of an ideology, where they knew that they would be treated badly or cast out in some way, or would have some sort of negative repercussion for telling the truth.
Yeah.
That, yeah, we should draw these lines. Because I think any normal adult knows that, like, what was shown to him is not okay.
Yeah.
No, you know,
there's a line. There's a lot. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, you have to be 18 to go into yeah. a strip club, or you have to be 18 to, you know, there's like age limits for a specific reason.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's just no age limit on a drag show.
Yeah.
Oh, it should just be the parents' choice. I mean, like, I mean,
well, should it be the parents' choice to give your kid heroin? You know,
right.
Like, I mean, at some point you do have to draw a line.
Yeah.
And I'm very much about parental rights, you know, like in school and all these other places where they're trying to strip away parental rights. But you do have to have lines. You can't medically abuse your child.
Yeah.
And you can't, like, you know, go do things like this or put them on drugs, you know. I think there's lines you have to have, you know.
Well, so let's talk about the mirror exposure effect. It's one
yeah.
of the first 5 minutes of the documentary, you're going to learn about that. You know, for the listeners, explain what that is, and why it was the first thing that you put in the documentary.
The very basic premise of it and concept is the reality that the more you're shown something, the more likely you are to believe it or accept it. And I think you can just look at any issue in your lifetime and how public opinion has changed, and then look at media and how the media has sold those things to you over time. So, you know, no matter how you feel about, I mean, you could give me really any issue. I mean, the gender thing, we'll go with that, okay? No matter which side you're on, there's no denying the reality that there has been a massive push over the past decade to normalize these identities throughout media. It's in movies and TV shows, kids' songs, all types of things, okay? Popular celebrities now are gender confused or non-binary, like Demi Lovato. I believe Lil Nas is gender confused now too, or at least seems like he is. You know, there's a number of them. And they display this stuff in their videos. You know, well, don't be surprised when kids latch on to the popular culture. I mean, the industry is very aware of this. I knew this as a director, you know, This is what the industry does. They're selling something. So ultimately, when you sell something, there's a science to it, and the science is the mirror exposure effect. So, you know, the question is for the right, I think, long term, how are we going to battle the fact that the left has every cultural institution and are using it to expose kids to every number of sexualized and politicized topics to lean them in a direction that they desire, you know? And then you think about the fact that the Chinese government essentially controls TikTok. So one of our greatest hostile enemies is sitting with our kids in many cases for longer than parents sit with their kids on a daily basis. If I walked up to any parent in America right now and I said, hey, would you let the Chinese government hang out in your kid's bedroom tonight? They'd say no, because that's crazy. But if you tell them, you know, can they use TikTok while you're busy, you know, doing whatever it is you're doing, they'd be like, sure, that's fine. Not realizing that these algorithms are in many ways more dangerous because you don't know what's going on.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, the algorithm, I think we did a podcast 2 or 3 years ago mentioning to you what Dedrick, my business partner, said, that leadership is the algorithm. The algorithm is leading how people think and the echo chambers and those type of things. And
it's the trendsetter.
It is. And the programming, true programming that we're seeing to the kids, I mean, to all of us, by the way. I mean, I feel like I'm addicted to my phone.
Yeah.
And
well, that was the thing about the teen focus groups, is when we asked them, will you give your kids social media?
Yeah.
Every kid said no, which shocked me
because
they all had it with the exception of one.
Yeah.
And so on the flip side of that, the excuse is essentially, well, drug addicts don't want their kids to have drugs. They don't want their kids on drugs. They know how damaging it is.
Yeah.
So I do think we're going to see some sort of like reversal that happens.
I hope so. I mean, it's you know, the TikTok thing, I'm all for banning TikTok.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's get rid of TikTok, please. The information out there on the damages of social media, you know, to our children, I think your documentary hits on that. It lets people actually see what other kids are saying. They realize that it's a problem. And that our kids are like being programmed to be, you know, they, them, Zer, Zim, clown self. I think you brought that one up on the...
Those are real pronouns. Yeah, crazy.
What is clown self?
I guess you identify as a clown.
Okay.
Yeah, you identify as a clown. There's ones who identify as birds too.
Really?
Yeah.
It's hard to take that serious, right?
I know it is. It's hard to take it serious, but you're a bigot if you don't. So you better take it seriously. Because legitimately, think about how crazy things have gotten. Well, you can get fired over not saying they, them right now. 10 years ago, if I told you you're going to get fired for not saying they, them at work, you'd be like, that's crazy. Come on, you're a jokester. 10 years from now, you will be fired for not saying clown, clown self if we stay on this trajectory.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I've got a couple hundred employees. If someone has a resume with their pronouns, automatic disqualification.
Oh yeah, no, me too. Like not happening. It's not happening.
Yeah, so it's the opposite. I actually had a company that we were going to hire for something, and the company, the sales rep had the pronouns in the bio. I'm like,
this is sort of a funny thing. So when I was running for Congress, I got an email from something called the U.S. Global Coalition, USGLC, Global Leadership Coalition, okay? And they wanted to basically like put me in this program, you know, to learn all these things from them without even needing to look into them and see who they were. I saw the pronouns.
Yeah, I go.
And I was like, no way. I go and I find out they're a Soros front group. They're funded by George Soros. And this group has been tricking a bunch of people on the right into getting into this group where they then manipulate them by seeding information that is untrue and leaning them in directions that the right base, the base that's voting them in, does not want them to go. And so it's like building these, it's almost what we're talking about with the mere exposure effect, but on a different physical level of manipulation that's more akin to tradecraft within spies and stuff like that. But that stuff is going on too. And that was the thing that really, like, just immediately I saw the pronouns and I was like, no, I'm good. Yeah. Pronouns are an automatic no for me. Even with the reporters too. Reporters email me with questions and they have pronouns. I'm like, no, I'm okay. Do you have anybody there without pronouns I can talk to?
Yeah. It's kind of funny because I actually don't think that everybody with their pronouns nearby are bad people.
No, you know? A lot of them are just manipulated and like a little off.
Exactly.
You know?
But I had to get to a point where, because I was very dismissive automatically of all of them.
Yeah.
Like, and then I was talking to a couple people and I noticed they had the pronouns nearby. I'm like, oh, you know what? They don't even know that. They have no clue why they have.
There's some old people too who did it because they thought it was like they have no idea what it is, and they just thought you're supposed to do it. Like they're like, oh, I didn't even realize it was political or anything. I just thought you're supposed to put it because they don't know if you're a girl or a boy.
Right.
They didn't even realize. Yeah, like they don't understand what they them even is.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because the reality is, like, if you're in a small corporate structure and this gets mandated down by HR and there's nobody who's a they them in your company, and you're like 60, 70 years old, you're going to think like some people are just confused because there's a girl named Ryan in the office and she's tired of being called a guy in her emails. So you're like, okay, we're going to have she and he on the emails so people know. Yeah. They don't realize the political nature of the changing of language and how that connects into fundamentally altering a country.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It's well intended. They're trying to be nice, but they just don't know.
Nice intentions have hurt the world the most sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's go back to the documentary. So, you know, this thing went viral. Elon retweeted it.
He is a boss. He is awesome.
I mean, that's incredible. How many views has that trailer got so far?
The trailer actually now has less than the actual film does. So trailer has, I want to say it's, I don't have the exact number on it. I think it's around 40 million, but the movie itself has, I think, 47 million at our last check this morning. So incredible. I mean, we didn't make the movie thinking 47 million people were going to watch it. And we've gotten letters from all over the world. It's nuts. I mean, like, the global reach is incredible of X. And we're really glad we did the rollout of an ability to watch it on X, because it opened up to a totally different audience that I think typically maybe doesn't watch long form as much, or at least on that platform. And the new ability to cast it to your TV too was really cool for a lot of people. But getting those notes from like Nairobi, you know, and different parts of, you know, East Asia and the Middle East and stuff, it's pretty cool to see like that it goes all the way out there, and that people get awakened to, I want to protect kids.
Well, what was the, you know, main reason that got you to just go in? I mean, it's a 2-hour documentary.
Yeah.
It's a long one. So, I mean, like, you went for it.
Yeah.
What's the main reason I do a long documentary like that?
It was really that I don't know that people had the patience to check in weekly for a series, because if I had had, you know, if I felt like that was the case where they were willing to do it, you know, 10 times, I would have made a 10-hour. I mean, there's so much there still. Mm-hmm. But I felt like we needed one place, the world needed one place to send people to see what's happening. Mm-hmm. Because this is like a, almost like canary in the coal mine, you know, where if you watch this and you don't recognize what's coming, you've lost the plot. Mm-hmm. And this is a warning, like, it's time for people to take things seriously, to take stock of where they're at in their own life, their own neighborhood, their own school, and really get activated to make a difference, make a change, do something, stand for something. You know, if you've got a situation where Your daughter is in high school. She's worked her whole life to get a scholarship in college, and she's now being asked to play against teams that have biological males on them, and she could get seriously physically injured by playing with them. Take a stand. Talk to all the parents. Everybody collectively refused to have your daughters play.
Yeah.
You know, people need to start doing dramatic things to stop the onslaught of these ideologies fundamentally altering our country forever. Because once you reach a certain threshold, there's no going back. America will be unrecognizable forever. And it's not that we need to pine for, like, living in the 1950s, because the world's never going to be the same. But I mean the same in the sense of sanity, you know, where... people don't need to be afraid. It's like we're all walking on eggshells.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what the country perpetually feels like right now, is everybody's afraid to say something. And it feels very much like an abusive relationship in the sense that you're afraid of saying the wrong thing. You're afraid of what the consequences of that are going to be. Mm-hmm. You're also afraid of what it's going to be like if you're not together anymore. You're afraid of all these different things. You know, what are the consequences of just being yourself?
Yeah.
And we didn't used to fear that in America, and it used to be the reason why people wanted to be like America. People wanted to be here because there was no fear of being yourself, of trying to be the greatest version of yourself, too. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've got to get back to.
Wow, that's a really interesting point, is that we're afraid to be ourselves right now, you know? And that, I mean, I can acknowledge that personally sometimes. I mean, I have to really think about,
yeah,
you know, gosh, can we say it at this point? You know, I don't want to make a negative impact. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Right now. I'm like, how do I not cause a divide?
Yeah.
But
unfortunately, and I've seen this with some friends, there has to be a recognition at some point that the divide exists.
Mm-hmm.
You're not creating it.
No,
it's true. You're standing in a divided, you know, gap.
Yeah.
Created by some truly awful people.
Yeah.
Who will never have to stand in that area. They created intentionally.
Yeah.
And we can try our best to fix it, but there's going to be times where you recognize you're in that dividing point and that it's been divided in that direction for a reason, with the intent of you having to fight with each other.
Sure.
For it not to break or to close or anything, but because they just want you to fight. And that there might be some issues where you need to stand your ground and just refuse to you know, bend, you know, because there's some areas where we can't bend, you can't break, and you have to refuse to kind of fall into what they've intended with this division.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think people pretty much know where I stand on a lot of these issues. I guess it's so, in when discussing these things, am I going along with just to get, you know, because you can frame things in a way that people will listen, kind of like the abortion thing we're talking about. It's like, baby killer.
Yeah.
It's like, and you could have that belief in rhetoric, but are you really helping the situation?
Yeah.
And so that's where I'm at right now, is like, you know, I'm going to tell the truth as I see it, but it's making sure that it's, I'm going to say, packaged in a way that doesn't turn people off that might listen. If, because I have a lot of people say, man, you know, you've really, you know, helped me understand the situation. And that's what
that's
I
valuable.
Really want. Yeah,
that's valuable. And I think the war on children, also one of the things that did set it apart and why it has had a wide reach, is because we're not just being accusatory.
No.
We're not just being, you know, inflammatory for the sake of being inflammatory.
And you could have been, by the way.
We could have been.
I saw them, like, I loved it because you didn't go.
We could have been. And trust me, there's impulses sometimes where, like, the dad in me, you know, and my personal, like, I tried to really bridge a line of give this the integrity it deserves so that your personal, you know, sort of feelings in the moment don't cloud how this could be informing people.
Absolutely.
And if you let it cloud it, it can change the whole tenor of things.
Yeah.
And so we tried to keep it very much about, here's the facts, here's the science, here's the studies, here's what's happening, here's the kids' voices themselves, here's the survivors, here's the people responsible, here's where the money's coming from, and all those things. And here's how you can stop it. You know, and that's probably the most important piece. And that's why my wife did the Parenting Revolution Manual, which people can get at freedomforever.us. They put their email in, they email it back to you.
What is the Parent Revolution
Manual? Basically, it's filled with action items of things you can do to make a difference, because that's one of the things we get questions about the most. Well, what can I do now? I'm activated. I want to do something. What can I do? That's got a bunch of different action items.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll have to check that out myself.
Yeah.
The thing about the documentary was it laid out a story that we've been talking about for, gosh, probably 3 years now.
Yeah.
And it laid it out in a way, like you were saying, it wasn't, you could have gone overboard on it. You didn't. You actually wanted to tell the other side of the story, at least get their perspective. Like, hey, you believe in doing your drag stuff. That's fine. But, you know, are these balls in the kid's face wrong?
Yeah.
I can't say that that's wrong. I can't say that the balls in the kid's face is wrong.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And how is it different than the Titans cheerleaders? They're in G-strings. And we're like, Landon, that's actually one of my favorite parts of the convo is Landon being like, they're in G-strings? Yeah. Like, really?
Yeah, really? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that. Yeah. And, you know, at that moment, he's kind of taken aback, like, oh, shit, they're not in G-strings, no. You know, because they're not,
right.
You know? And I think that that's actually, in a weird way, he identified the line. That is the line. You identified it.
Yeah.
People are okay with the Titans cheerleaders. That's basically the line of where it gets inappropriate.
Right.
You know?
Good point.
If you go past that, it gets inappropriate.
Yeah.
And these drag shows are going way past that, you know?
Well, and, you know, with the drag shows, if they've got a G-string, it's like their package is hanging.
Yes.
So it's like, it's a little different.
Yeah, it's a little, just a little bit different.
You know?
Yeah, it's just a little different.
It's you know, it's crazy to think that, and he was trying to make his arguments fair, didn't land, he realized he was wrong, but where he could have at least given you some is like, hey, this is wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
I would say a very ballsy thing to do to pretend that there was nothing wrong with it.
Ballsy thing to do to pretend that the balls weren't in the,
yes,
you know,
that was not wrong.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You talked about Elon retweeting it.
Yeah.
What do you call it now? Re-Xing it?
Reposting.
Reposting.
Reposting it.
You know, what's your view on Elon taking over X and the potential that has to, you know, allow more freedom?
Yeah. I'm glad you got Twitter's new identity right, because we wouldn't want to misgender Twitter.
Sorry. Yeah.
and X now. No, I think X is incredibly important. Elon is just, I mean, he's a monster right now for free speech and for advancing. You know, he sees this the exact same way I do. This is a civilizational battle. We are fighting for the survival of humanity, and a lot of humanity doesn't realize it yet. He realizes ultimately his real mission is he wants to bring humanity to the cosmos. You know, he wants us to seed the stars. And it's a beautiful thing, because that is the advancement of humanity. You know, if something happens to Earth, humanity goes on. And I think that's a pinnacle moment for us as a species when we're able to do that. He realizes that cannot happen if humanity doesn't survive to make it to that technological point.
Right.
And wokeness has the ability and probability of destroying us if we continue on the path we're on. And he recognizes that. And I think people on the left who swore up and down he was a genius for the past 20 years should probably take stock of how quickly they were able to have their minds changed,
right,
by a gaggle of talking heads on TV who are mad at his tweets. Okay, there's no denying the dude's a genius, okay? He's fantastically smart. He's recognizing patterns for a reason. It falls into his expertise, the pattern recognition of what's going on, and just the basic physics behind a lot of this. I mean, even things like population collapse that are being really built in by a lot of the global elite, they want population collapse for very weird reasons. That they could benefit from. And Elon recognizes that, and it's why he's encouraging people, too, to have more babies, you know, which is in itself a very pro-life position, and has reposted, you know, I talked about Jane Goodall and her sort of anti-human perspective on life, and Elon, he really took a stand on that one, too, with me, that we need to stand up for life, and for humanity to advance, we have to stop this anti-human and depopulation agenda, because it's what it is.
It is.
And all of this goes in together. And so, you know, I think the war on children explains a lot of it. We're probably going to have to make another movie to explain the global effect on all of humanity and everything. But I do think that with X, it's a turning point that, you know, could help change things and bring us out, which is why I think he doesn't think twice about how much he paid for it.
Yeah, well, and, you know, he reminds me of Trump in a way, because you have the mainstream media absolutely against him. You have the court system. What just happened in Delaware?
Ludicrous.
It is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, you have... so.
It's just third world country shit. Like, just say it is. It's third world country shit. Yeah. This doesn't happen in America.
Yeah,
you know,
for people to understand, he made a deal in, I forget the year, 2015, 2016, 2017, that if he could hit these specific marks that were outrageous, they're like, there's no way you're going
Everybody
to hit
said
these
he
marks.
Would never hit them, and yeah, he hit
there's
them.
There's no way you're going to hit these marks. He does it. His stock is up. Hundreds and hundreds of percent.
He gets X compensation plan.
He hits his marks.
Yep.
It was all
He made everybody money.
Yeah, all performance. And then a judge is going to say, you know what?
And that was approved by shareholders. Very important point.
Yeah.
Shareholders approved it, and they all thought it was crazy too. So they're like,
okay.
All right, go for it. Sure. And he did it. And they all made money. Nobody's complaining about it.
And then she says, nope. It's too much money. You don't deserve that. Yeah. The board was under your control. God, like,
ludicrous.
She is everything wrong with the world right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the people that I'm absolutely against. I can't align with you. If you think like that, you're not honest.
Yeah. And that's the true enemy of capitalism because, you know, like, capitalism in this time of wokeness has been really perverted in a lot of ways too, to mean something it doesn't mean. Elon really is, like, you know, with what happened there, I mean, that is a case of just anti-capitalist lunacy, you know, that shareholders can't vote to approve a compensation package for their CEO anymore. The courts are going to step in and say, no, we actually think that that's not fair. Does the state own the company?
And he grew the company to one of the biggest in the world. Like, look.
And everybody said it was impossible.
Yes.
So you're acknowledging that this guy performs at a level of CEO that no other CEO could have performed at, but you won't pay him.
No one else could have done it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's the weaponization of the judicial system.
Yeah.
You know that judge is either a complete lunatic or dishonest.
They
one
are.
Of the two.
It's both.
Or both. Yeah. She could be both.
Yeah.
But you know, the fact that she would do that and then seeing the people cheer. And it's like, look, those are like... people aren't being honest if they're really watching the situation.
They don't see the cascade effects that are going to happen. There is a whole... this is honestly one of the biggest problems with the world right now. People are not thinking about the effects of what comes after things. Okay, yeah. So those cascading effects, second order effects of what happens after an initial event, nobody's thinking about those. The people who think about those things are terrified of what's happening.
Yeah, of course.
They're terrified of what comes next because they know if this event happens, that means this, and this are going to happen. Look at our economic situation. I would tell anybody, look deeply at the debt crisis we're in as a country. It is, you want something to terrify you, look at that. Look at the economic position of the United States and the debt crisis that your average American is and that our government is in.
Yeah.
And our banks. It's dangerous.
$34 trillion.
It's dangerous. It's very dangerous.
It
and
is.
People don't realize, again, how fast all this can happen. It can all come to a head at the same time.
Well, what's horrifying to me is it's that the mob, I didn't realize there was such a mob that would be against him like that, to where they would be for this huge injustice.
That's how
this
quickly
is one of
the mere exposure effect works.
Yeah.
You know, like all they needed was CNN and MSNBC, NBC, Washington Post, and, you know, celebrities in Hollywood to all turn on him at the same time, and that's enough.
Yeah.
You know? And that's enough to write off a lifetime of work and be like, oh, he's stupid. You know, like, yes.
Okay,
yes, this guy who's the richest person on earth got there by being stupid. You're correct.
Yeah, well, I've seen posts like, oh, he didn't invent this. I'm like, okay, let's just say that he didn't invent
every single
pretend
thing.
He didn't invent any of it.
Yeah.
He's okay. A genius still.
Yeah. Do you know how hard it is to build a company like that?
Or to just make money. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, it's like it's not easy to make anywhere near the amount of wealth he's created, not just for himself, but for other people.
And to do it in rocket science. Yes. And to do it by building electric cars when no other company has done it. It's like, you know, people aren't being honest when they say, oh, he just was handed it and he didn't invent it. He stole the technology.
Well, and there's all this bullshit, too, about his dad, you know, out there that his dad like gave him this massive leg up and blah, blah, blah. I'll just leave it at like there's really no truth to that at all. Elon is one of those people that took incredible risks to get where he is. He bet on himself.
Absolutely.
And he could have lost everything multiple times. And so I have a ton of respect for what he's done. And he's taking risks right now. Even him putting out my documentary, you know, is risky in so many ways. Yeah. There's so many things that can happen as a result of him just putting that out. And I don't want people to forget that, you know, there's all these responsibilities that are still on a person like that, where they're CEO of all these different companies and they're willing to stand up for the truth to protect kids.
Yeah.
You know,
it's true.
And I think it's important because it goes back to the first order of what I believe our biological intent is as men. And it's like we need to protect. That's something that's being lost in too many men.
Yeah.
I think they've been emasculated into thinking like, oh, we have to always take the back seat. Like, we were born protectors.
Yeah.
And you embrace it or you reject it. But if you reject it, just know full well, like, that you were born to be this.
Yeah.
You know, that is somewhere inside every man. I don't care how effeminate they display themselves to be. I truly believe that's inside every man, to be a protector. Yeah. Unless there's something mentally unwell, you know. And so it sets a good example what he's doing too for young men.
Well, you think about this, right? Like, what would the world be like right now if we didn't have Elon Musk and Joe Rogan?
Yeah,
courage. I mean, where would we be, man?
Yeah, I mean, I think things would be far further down a dangerous road now.
Think about it, like, gosh, Elon Musk and Joe Rogan have in many ways saved America. I don't know where we would be without them right now.
I think it would be pretty bad. I mean, specifically Elon. I mean, I also think there's also something to be said for the amount of people who have, you know, micro followings too, that are doing hard work on their local level. Because without them, we'd be dead too.
Oh, no doubt.
You know,
even what you've done, it makes a big, big difference.
No, I'm talking about like there's people with like, you know, they have maybe 600, 700 followers online.
Sure.
But they have real influence in a small group of people in their community. And without those people, America would be in a much worse position.
Yeah.
Because on a local level, it drives a lot of the politics, these very small groups and functions. And those people who are incredibly active and doing the right things, like, they are making a huge difference on a local level.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And just the activism in general.
Yeah.
You know, of people that are willing to stand up, courageously speak the truth.
Yep.
That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Who's willing to courageously speak the truth? And at any level, small level, 600 followers on Instagram, 1,000. I think you're over 300,000. Or to the level where it's Elon Musk and Joe Rogan, where they have the microphone to the world.
Yeah.
And we're like, thank you. Cause there's a lot more I'm saying people with less of a following, speaking out, but you know, you have Instagram and Facebook shadow banning and silencing.
I mean, look at how they've tried to I'm amazed that I have an account on Instagram still,
too.
Honestly.
Me too.
It honestly does surprise me. They haven't banned my account. I expected them to by now. To be perfectly honest,
they just finally started putting up with you.
I feel like they did too. I feel like they finally were just like, all right, well, screw it, okay. We'll just leave it alone.
Starbucks posting again.
But you know, it is really healthy for people to know that they're not going to be banned off X.
Right.
You know, that is very healthy for the culture of conversation, because a lot of content creators that do really great stuff are not afraid anymore to tell the truth, because they're like, oh, well, if I get kicked off Instagram, I don't really care.
Yeah.
You know, and I love reaching all the different audiences and everything with the things that we are doing. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to alter my speech to stay on a platform. I'll just survive on another one. Yeah. You know, the truth will live on as long as we have somewhere, you know, for it to go, you know, that's really, truly accessible to people. And that's the thing, like X has a scale where Apple can't get rid of them. You know, these places can't pull them out of the App Store. They're screwed in court. They know that. So they're stuck with X in a way they weren't with other apps. Like when Parler first came out. Do you remember Parler?
I remember. I don't remember what it was.
So Parler was supposed to be a competitor to Twitter.
Okay.
And it was early on when they banned Trump. And it was a smart move by the people who did it because people were very angry about the free speech implications of banning a president. Imagine that. And a ton of people went and jumped over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they weren't prepared for this yet. So what they did is they frantically just, they made a deal. Apple pulled it from the store. Mm. So you couldn't download the app.
Yeah.
They got tons of downloads, tons. Yeah. It was going to crush it in terms of numbers. But they just pulled it down. And so they can't do that with X though. It's just too big. And I think when people see the stuff they're going to roll into X, they're going to be... X is going to be the app people spend the most time on their phones, without a question. Without question.
I'm personally not on X, so
I think
I'm going to get an X for this podcast.
I think you will because of what's coming on X.
Yeah, no, I like Lurk, but yeah. I've never.
It's
going to
be the
anything.
Everything app,
and you know, I just love what Elon's doing. I love what Rogan's doing. I love what you're doing. I mean, this stuff,
you need to have this show on X.
We should do that. All my technical people could figure out what that looks like. But, you know, ultimately we want to kind of stand with people that want to make a difference and want to courageously speak the truth and that give me inspiration like you, like Elon, like Rogan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's because it's not easy to speak the truth today.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of consequences.
A lot of consequences.
I mean, I don't lie to people about that because people do need to know that there are a lot of consequences to it. I mean, like the number of things that we've had to put up with is crazy. I mean, we've had hazmat teams at our house for
really?
Threats in our mail, blood soaked money, all types of crazy shit. Mm. And then you have your creepy weirdos. We've had a guy show up banging on the doors before.
Oh, wow.
And thankfully, the police are great here, and we've got an officer that's actually at the street level now, very close by, and good security and everything. So, you know, we don't worry about it, but you still get these crazies, and you get, you know, the government weaponized against you. I've been, you know, targeted by them in many different ways. And I think that people do deserve to know that it's not the easiest thing. But I do think that if you compare it to what our founders did, you compare it to what our ancestors did even.
It's true.
It's nothing. Like, it's like, I'm kind of too easy about the whole thing. But honestly, I feel like, man... Some of our ancestors froze in fields with like wounds and bled out in some freezing cold place in the middle of nowhere. And like, we're whining over getting audited, you know, like, you know, it's life and evil people are going to do evil things. You just got to be strong enough. I always say devil works hard. You need to work harder.
That's right.
You know,
well, let's get to work.
Yep.
So, well, Robbie, thanks so much for the podcast, man. Great getting to hang out with you for the first time in too long. And
I know.
Do it again soon.
We got to. All right, we need you home in Tennessee more often.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.